We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I feel like I'm getting ready for a high school football game in like 1993 or so. Tony Gill, he's been in the dials. Welcome to the Jungle. Nick Szczepkowski with you, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. As we continue our preview, spent the first hour tonight talking NL Central. Hour number two, we go to the AL Central. Maybe expectations aren't division or bust or another championship series appearance or bust, but the Sox are plenty interesting. And for more on them, go out to the hotline once again as James Fagan joins us from The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at JR Fagan as well. James, appreciate you taking the time tonight, and unfortunately, no Notre Dame postseason to talk about at this point.
I can read about how Bonzi Colson rebroke his foot. There's that.
Yeah, there is that. I don't know if that's the exciting part. Talk about an awful farewell, though, for a guy that did so much for a program that I don't want to say underachieved because of injuries, but, man, what a disappointing end to a heck of a career there. But that's not necessarily why we called you. We'll have to have that discussion over drinks soon, before too long. Drink our sorrows away because Notre Dame basketball and the disappointment it was this year. White Sox are interesting. I don't know about good. What are your takeaways as we sit here a week or so from breaking spring training camp?
Takeaways is that there are days where you stack the lineup of Yoan Moncada, Avisaíl Garcia, Jose Abreu, days where Tim Anderson and Nicky Delmonico are clicking, that the offense looks pretty lively, as they have the last 2 days. And it could be a unit that, if people come along as you hope, flashes average or above average, even if they have a hot second half over the course of the season. The reason why people are projecting this team to be bottom of the league is mostly their pitching staff. It's a rotation that is either, you know, kind of yeoman like Shields and Gonzalez, or with Giolito, Lopez and Plummer, just hasn't proven itself yet or put up to the numbers that are going to show up in projections to make them a contending club. They could flout those expectations this year and maybe be 75 wins or more. They could, you know, disappoint and take a huge step back, or they'll probably be somewhere in the middle and be around a 70-win team is what I'm expecting.
And looking at that, the rotation, you look at James Shields, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone. He gets the opening day start. What's the realistic, I guess, hope for the Sox? As quickly as 3 weeks, 4 weeks in, hope that he doesn't give up a bunch of homers at that point and deal them right away? Or what's kind of a, what do they look at James Shields for 2018 and expect him to really do?
I guess your peak hope is what happened down the stretch last year, which was that dropping him down in his delivery, you know, typically the rationale with that is that you get some more movement on your cutters and you get some more run on your four-seam fastball, but you probably sacrifice command not going over a top like that. What, he made that trade because he was obviously at a point in his career where he got to try some stuff. That made him about a 4.5 ERA pitcher. That's not great, but you know, you don't get daily questions about why this guy is still in the rotation when he puts stuff like that up. And if he does that for half a season, I don't think there's like a big market where you can trade him after a month or even in June, but that's the type of guy who, when August starts, someone who literally just has injuries that have created a black hole in their rotation will give you a player to be named later or something of that line of value for it. And maybe that clears up a spot eventually for a very ready Michael Kopech at that point in time.
And looking at it with the way this rotation shakes down, I wanted to get the Kopech here in a minute, but is it safe? It's not necessarily safe to say, but Lucas Giolito, another nice outing today. Is he the one that maybe has impressed of the guys you at least expect to be in the starting rotation during the opening series?
I would say Lucas has definitely had both the best spring of anyone in this group, especially the three young guys. And it's probably the guy I would be most optimistic about this season of the three young guys. We still kind of have to figure out how much consistency Ronaldo Lopez is going to have with his curveball. And, you know, Fulmer, obviously his struggles have been well documented. Lucas showed last year that his fastball changeup combination is, you know, potent enough to get him through games. He's very good at settling for ground ball outs when the lineups are going to give them to him, like they did in mass today. And if he refines that wipe-up curveball, if the slider is as effective as he, you know, says it is, he's going to have a lot of weapons to get through lineups. And really kind of is showing a window where that 200-inning top-of-the-rotation, maybe number two starter-type guy that we hoped for or was hoped for when that Eaton trade was pulled off, you know, really comes to fruition.
Speaking with James Fagan from The Athletic, follow him on Twitter at JR Fagan as well. And you mentioned it, Michael Kopech. I think it's the million-dollar question at this point for Sox fans. When can we realistically expect to see him get the call-up?
I think realistically, in terms of his performance, it's probably going to be late May or June where he's doing stuff in AAA where it's going to be openly kind of ridiculous in a sense that he's still there. But I think they're going to have the same rationale they had with Yamankata and everyone else they called up last year, that they're going to wait until there's a permanent slot in the rotation for him to have. Now, that could come sooner if there's some sort of major injury or some sort of clear lapse in performance with Fulmer or Lopez or Gonzalez or Shields. Really, everyone can kind of blow up at any time. That's kind of the way of starting pitching. Or a trade happens in July that kind of clears up that permanent spot to come in and plug him in and have him on a regular schedule, because they don't want him going up and down. That's not the way they want to treat, you know, the best pitching prospect in the organization.
And where do they? You mentioned his name there very briefly. Carson Fulmer, where are the Sox on him after what's been a pretty rough spring outside of yesterday?
So White Sox absolutely 100% wanted Carson Fulmer to win this job in the starting rotation. They wanted, if he showed any signs of progress at all, if he was simply kind of mucking it through and didn't look that bad, they're going to give him the job. That was clear as much to Hector Santiago talking to him, that this was not like a real competition. They wanted their prospect as upside to win that spot. And he showed them enough the other day to really kind of, you know, dismiss the concerns that they would have that he's just going to go in there and get shelled every time. It wasn't perfect. He fell into, I think, a point where he threw balls on 15, 16 pitches. He fell out of his delivery a bit. But you saw the stuff that is touted when he was online with his delivery and he wasn't, you know, too high effort and moving his head as he can sometimes fall into. It's 91, 94 with a lot of life, and he has a wide assortment of hard breaking pitches that can get a lot of weak contact. It doesn't click and it's not in sync all the time, and that's going to be something that's going to constantly be a battle. That's probably why he's going to be more a back-end guy if he does stick in rotation, but you see why it works when he is, you know, functional and in the zone.
Yeah, and so far we've seen Moncada today, three RBIs. He's had a fine spring. Nothing to worry about that necessarily. One guy I'm interested with, and I think most Sox fans are, what's the opinion? What's the belief in Avi Garcia? Is he going to be a guy that is, all right, gets off to another hot start like last year and you look to deal him? Or is that really a piece that can be a foundational piece for this rebuild, kind of at the weird point of his career where he's at versus where the Sox are right now?
I mean, I would think it's prudent. I mean, I think the ultimately opportunistic thing would have been to deal him in this offseason, given that he just came off his career year and you can never really trust that his value is going to be higher, but this is kind of a weird offseason as far as market. I think up until the point where he signs an extension, you can assume that they're listening to offers for him. It's definitely a possibility that he's a midseason guy that they push out there, much like they, you know, reaped in a fortune for Quintana. It wouldn't be to that level, but the values can spike in July would be the general concept, and that would clear a permanent spot for Eloy. He kind of has to prove it to him and show that the, you know, the performance is stable enough to really earn an extension. They're going to use him prominently. They're going to put him in the two slot. That's where you put your best hitters, and Rick Renneria has a lot of faith in his speed and contact continuing to make him dynamic. It's going to continue to be wait and see, I guess, to see what his long-term role is going to be.
Yeah, it's a confusing thing for me just watching as an observer, and I'm sure it's not any easier for Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and everyone making decisions there. Where are you at, just as a baseball observer, not even necessarily a reporter on this? Tim Anderson's had a strange first two seasons, really turned it on there in the latter parts of last year. What's an expectation realistically here at shortstop, and defensively, has he gotten better or seemingly gotten better this spring?
I mean, Tim Anderson has the athleticism, range, and arm strength to play shortstop. It's just about hands and the level of mistakes that he's going to make. Service scouts has always thought he'd be a kind of a high error guy. There's been a little of that this spring, but how much are we supposed to assess somebody, you know, being a moment slow on a couple plays, you know, in February, March? This would be when that would happen anyway. So it's hard to assess until the season really starts. I think ultimately I don't have huge doubts about him being able to stick defensively at shortstop. It's a question of whether he's going to be kind of average or suitable, or going to be a guy who ultimately allows his athleticism to make him plus. On the bat side, you know, Rick Renneria talked about he's more comfortable with him bottom of the lineup, just letting him be a guy who's always going to be swing first. I think that's correct. I think we saw with Alexi, you can't just force patience on a swing first hitter. Realistically, that makes the ceiling a guy you hope with his speed can hit in the 280-300 range, and his OBP is probably going to be 310-320. That's not great, but if that's a speedy shortstop and he's at the bottom of your lineup and you're not really counting on him to get on base or be a leadoff man, that's going to be good because he has the pop to probably hit 15-20 home runs a year, along with, you know, creating extra bases on all of gappers with his speed. So I think I don't see him as the star or the best player on the team or even one of the three best players on the team necessarily through their contention, but I think he could be a reliable average to above average shortstop for a long and very cost-controlled amount of time. And I think that ultimately is something that people tend to over or underrate as far as something to have on a long-term contender.
All right, we did the NL Central the first hour of the show, asked different people different predictions for teams along those lines. The whole first hour, I'll ask you predictions here too, but I don't care anything about win-loss record. It's not about that this year with these White Sox. Which of these highly regarded prospects will we see in a White Sox uniform this year, and how soon might some of those, I mean, you already mentioned Kopech, but the other ones that we have not yet named, how likely are we to see some of the big boppers at a guaranteed rate field now this summer, and how soon might that come?
I would think Eloy, the bat is like so invincible that he probably is going to be a little bit behind Kopech on the fact that he's going to have to get promoted to another level, and they'll probably have him spend some time in Charlotte. But I would think above 75% seen Eloy this year, and I would think it's around July or August. There's a chance that it's, you know, a September call-up, but I don't see why they would not September call-up a Eloy Jimenez who's hitting 950 OPS in AAA. That just doesn't seem like something they would do. Alec Hansen really seems like it'd be, you know, if he absolutely shoves and stays healthy, maybe a September call-up for a start or two. But I would think that's a 20% chance. They probably aren't trying to get his innings up that much. I think we're going to see a lot of middle-tier guys from AAA. I think you're going to see a Spencer Adams or a Jordan Stevens debut this season. I think Zach Collins is going to be kind of a level-to-level guy who takes a long time to develop his defense. A lot of the half in the middle of that top prospect list with Dylan Cease, Dane Dunning, Blake Rutherford, could be another year or two before you see them.
James, appreciate the time. Appreciate you picking up the phone all the way from out in Arizona. And those spring training contests, they're finally winding down. You're actually going to have real competitive baseball to watch and to follow and to cover. Just a matter of, what, 8 days away now?
Counting them down. I got a little, you know, countdown sheet in my hotel room that it's real baseball.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you taking the time. As always, we'll do it throughout the season, and we'll be following your work all year long at The Athletic.
Thanks.
James Fagan right there. You can follow all of his work, as I said, at J.R. Fagan. We have to break down some of the other AL Central teams, the ones that might be competing for a World Series, for a wild card berth. Heck, could there be an upset in the division? We'll break all that down. We'll take trips to Cleveland and to Minnesota to preview the Indians and the upstart Twins from a season ago, coming up on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome Welcome back in Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. It is Nick Schapkowski with you up until midnight tonight. Spent the first hour of the program talking a lot of National League Central. This hour dedicated solely to the American League. And maybe the White Sox expectations aren't that high for this year. We just talked to James Fagan from The Athletic and broke down all of that. But for the favorites in the American League Central, and to me, by a wide margin, we go out to the hotline once again. Jonathan Peterlin joins us from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Jonathan, an intern back in the day here at 670 The Score. Welcome home in some sorts, John.
Glad to be on here, Nick. Of course, big fan of yourself, and I always appreciate it. The time you took to mentor me a little bit back in the day, or at least just not be mean to me. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's what I try to do, because I figure most of my former interns, we haven't had interns in some time, I figure they're all going to be my boss one day, so I might as well be nice to them, so hopefully they think at least nicely of me in some capacity. Want to pick your brain about this Cleveland Indians team, because I look at it, and I mean, okay, maybe... Yeah, Santana goes to Philadelphia, and that's the big signing, or the big loss, I guess, of the offseason for the Tribe. But is there any reason for me to think that, besides injuries, that this isn't a team that can chase 95-plus wins again and run away with the American League Central?
Well, they should run away with the Central. I think 95 is an accurate number, somewhere in that ballpark. The feeling in Cleveland is that you come off a 102-win season, you have the 22-game winning streak, accomplishments that most teams would feel really good about. And then you'd think, okay, you take that into the postseason, you roll the dice and see what happens. But after last year, the front office, Chris Antonetti in particular, they just seemed dispirited by the whole process. Take it 2 years ago, back obviously to the World Series where the Cubs got the better of the Indians. But in that process, you lost the entire starting pitchers, the starting rotation, everybody not named Corey Kluber, essentially. And that's why Kluber started games 1, 4, and 7. And so the Indians were in a fortunate situation. They outplayed themselves relative to what their expectations were supposed to be. And entering 2017, the front office loads up. They decide to push all the chips in the middle of the proverbial table and decide to go for it. 102 wins and no payoff. A first-round exit against a Yankees team that you're winning 2-0. So this offseason, you think to yourself, well, why should we try to push anything forward? And it's kind of what the Indians have done throughout this entire offseason. You lose Santana, you bring Yonder Alonso in his place, and you're just kind of playing with a lesser team than what you had last year. It'll still be good enough for a Central win. It'll still be good enough to find yourself in the postseason. As you know, the difference between 102 wins and 92 wins come postseason time can become negligible, but a lot of Cleveland fans feel as if they just stayed put and are, for lack of a better term, just kind of wasting one of their prime years where they still have all of these young controllable assets and other pieces on top of that.
When you look at that and start to break it down, assuming that things go right and as expected for them this year, once late June, July comes around and we start talking trade deadline, money available, any reason to be hesitant to expect what the Indians might be able to do then?
I think that's what everyone here around here is hoping, is that Tito can reassess the team at the midway point, try to figure out exactly where they do need help, where they don't need help. I think they're more worried about what they're going to do off-season, if I can be honest. I know we're supposed to project ahead for this year, but losing Tony Allen or potentially losing Andrew Miller in that bullpen could shake some things up. But as far as the deadline, we've talked everything about, well, what does it take to get Manny Machado to 94 wins would be good enough to go ahead and see what you can do in the postseason. So it's a wide range of emotions when it comes towards what fans want to do and what the front office seems like they're going to do for this Indian team.
And speaking with Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 in Cleveland is where you can find all of his work. Looking at the rotation this year, obviously with the Indians, you always hear it. Oh, starting pitching, starting pitching, starting pitching. Corey Kluber down the stretch last year, at least postseason-wise, was not the Klubot that we were used to. Was that simply just out of gas, or is there something to be worried about in 2018?
We have nothing to guarantee that, but everyone around here played under the assumption that Kluber was injured, and Kluber wasn't at 100%. He still, went for five straight 200-inning seasons, another top-10 finish in the Cy Young Award. Corey Kluber will be okay. No one's really worried about Corey Kluber. It's more about what happens further on to that rotation. Because if you look at the top, they're going to be fine. Kluber's great. Carlos Carrasco's great. Trevor Bauer, depending on what Trevor Bauer you get, past a last 12 games of the season, he was lights out more than anything else. So you got to assume Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, and then it becomes a little bit shakier as far as for where the rotation goes and what you eventually see, because guys like Danny Salazar won't be starting opening day. Now, guys like Mike Clevenger have made this rotation, and I think he's got a very bright future. 97 mile an hour fastball. Kid can be lights out at times, but what do you do with that fifth spot? He's going to go to Josh Tomlin. Well, go to somebody like a Ryan Merritt, who you saw most famously, I think a lot of your listeners will know about the 2016 ALCS against Toronto, where he really made his mark. So a lot of question marks in the back part of that rotation, although the front three seem to be pretty set in stone.
Hey, you can go over the rotation there. What about the bullpen? Because that's been dynamic as hell for the Indians the last couple of years. Still plenty of reason to believe that that thing's going to be clicking on all cylinders and be ready to go to help this team to 95-plus victories in all likelihood?
Yeah, I mean, Cody Allen, Andrew Miller, you guys all know what they both bring to the table. You do lose Brian Shaw, which, although he was easy to hate because it seemed as if Brian Shaw was that one guy that every single time there was a big moment, he would come up in just the worst way possible. I'm not going to bring up old Cubs names, like guys like Mel Rojas, who if you go back and look on their stat line, it doesn't seem as horrible as we all remember it, but it seems like every time he was in a big spot, it was just blown save after blown save. That was a lot of what the Indians thought of Brian Shaw, but he was a good reliever. He was a good, solid player. And it just kind of gets a little decimated. But I think for right now, I think they still have one of the top bullpens and a solid part of their team, no question about it. Pitching's never been an issue for this squad, at least over the Terry Francona era at this point.
Yeah, and he seems to manage a bullpen and been ahead of a lot of this bullpenning ideas that have become so big the last couple of years. He's been doing it for time and time again and does it just about as well as anyone in all of big league baseball. Speaking with Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 FM in Cleveland. It's where you can hear all of his work, covers the Indians, all of Cleveland sports for that matter. He's trying to get over the Joe Thomas retirement as we take a few minutes with him tonight. That's all. I will say this, and I know we're doing a ton of baseball this evening. I will say this. That's an all-time press conference right there with some of his tongue-in-cheek compliments that he gave the organization and some old teammates on his way out.
He's the only person that could do it, and everyone would laugh and just think, yeah, you've earned that. I think we could all look back and say, yeah, okay, if you want to throw a few parting shots, it's okay. You know, the fascinating part about Joe Thomas, Nick, is that Joe Thomas was very quiet early on in Cleveland.
That's what I thought. It was the guy that, he goes fishing instead of the draft. He doesn't like cameras. And like the last 2 years, it's like, geez, take the camera out of his face.
I think he just is ahead of the game in this. He just realized, oh, wait, I can stay in football. I can have a voice. I can have an opinion. And nobody can silence me. Think about how ridiculous this is. He was going on our morning show program. He was going on literally anyone that would ask him to appear. He was having his own podcast. And it's not like you had to go through the media relations of the Browns in order to get this done. I could DM Joe Thomas right now and be like, hey, let's have a 10-minute chat. I want to put this on a podcast. He'd be like, let's do it, buddy. How accessible he is and how willing he is while he was still an active player is something I've never come across, and I don't think we'll ever come across again. But Joe Thomas, always pure class, and couldn't have represented the city of Cleveland any better. No doubt about that.
Yeah, and it's weird to look back on. Well, 10-time Pro Bowler, certain Hall of Famer on the first ballot, and never play in a playoff game. But we're speaking some Indians tonight, picking your brain about that. I mean, I look at this team, and offensively, obviously, plenty of things that'll scare you. But how many teams in the American League, I guess the Yankees are the first one to come to mind to slow myself down a little bit. But when you have Ramirez, when you have Lindor both towards the top of the lineup, I mean, that's MVP candidate, maybe a space in the order, and another MVP candidate right there. Have they reached their ceilings yet? Are they finished products, or are they still getting better?
Got to still be getting better. And look at that infield. Every one of them is an all-star. Alonzo, Kipnis, J-Ram, and Lindor, all-stars. I'll tell you this, though, Nick. The crux of this team and where it either takes that step forward in the postseason, is able to get the job done or exceed the 95 win total, it'll start in the outfield. One with Michael Brantley, because they picked up the option on him, and that's a big-time gamble. In a market like this where you don't have $12 million to throw around, it's a big-time gamble to make on a guy that is injured more times than he's actually on the field over the past couple of years. And then you go towards guys like Bradley Zimmer, who still is more of a question mark. Greg Allen, what exactly he'll be able to perform at, what rate he'll be able to perform at. I'm so young in that regard, too. And then Lonnie Chisnall, who is coming off one of his best seasons. If he has some sort of regression, this outfield is what scares me the most. There's depth there, and Tito always works the matchups, and he always handles the lefty-righty splits like really no other manager can. But it is something that worries me. It is something that if this team is not able to get over the Red Sox, get over the Yankees, get over some of the elite American League teams, it'll be because of that.
And you look at it, I just sat here and complimented all hell out of Tito Francona. I think for my money, he's as good as anyone there is. Maybe not better than everyone, but just as good as anyone managerial wise. Is the feeling in Cleveland, like, is it at the point where World Series or bust? And then to follow up on that, if it is bust, if it is short of winning a World Series, is it at the point where Indians fans are frustrated enough to be calling for not necessarily Tito's head, but somebody's head in this?
So Tito he's built up enough equity where Terry Francona can get away with anything. It could be another first-round exit. It won't be Tito's fault. I think there's a deep appreciation and a deep baseball understanding within the city that just recognizes where they were before Terry Francona and where they are now. No other team has won more games over the past 5 years in the industry. There's a rough stretch post-1990s Indians were, you know, the bell of the ball, where there was not a lot of good baseball to be had. So they're very appreciative. They understand the impact that Terry Francona has and what he's able to do as far as getting the most out of these players. As for this year, yeah, it'd be a massive disappointment if they don't end up anywhere close to the World Series, ALCS or higher. If you lose in the first round again, there'll be a lot of blame. Not at Tito. There'll be a lot of blame at Chris Antonetti and this front office for not going out there and not addressing the needs of this team. And letting guys like Carlos Santana, obviously, they're not going to pay him the 3 years, $60 million that Philadelphia did, but not going out and doing anything and letting yourself. Think about this, Nick. They're going to be a 95-win team, roughly, and they're going to have offensive liabilities and potentially Yonder Alonso, if he looks like the second half as opposed to the first half of last year, the catching spot where between Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez, it's an out pretty much every time through the order, both of them, offensive liabilities. And then at center field, if you got the second half of Bradley Zimmer, same story there. They have an opportunity for as stacked of an offensive team as this is to have three, and if Kipnis has a bad season, four offensive liabilities every lineup through or every run through the lineup. And so, yeah, there'll be a ton of blame on Chris Antonetti for not being able to put a good enough team around a squad of J-Ram and Francisco Lindor who are entering their absolute prime season, the need to start putting together deep postseason runs, not to mention, of course, the pitching staff that we've talked about.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, a worst-case scenario, what plays out? But I think you just kind of hit it on the head there. If the offense, if you get half of it to sputter, this team is not built to sustain that necessarily. Ultimately, when we look back on this by the end of September, start of October, what will it say about the Cleveland Indians? Run away with the division, as simple as that? Or is it maybe a Twins team or somebody that's going to give them a realistic scare?
Yeah, I would be shocked. I think you would be too. I think the baseball world would be if the Twins took some sort of magical leap forward and the Indians went from 102 to maybe 90 wins and saw themselves on the outside of the postseason. But I think also, I think they would address some sort of need at the trade deadline if they felt they were too far apart. But they also do have enough players that I want to see them at least entertain the idea of bringing up. Guys like Francisco Mejia, who is, again, just destroyed for what he does defensively as a catcher. But they've been working with him at third base. They've been working with him in the outfield. Guys like Yandy Diaz, working with him at third base. Again, not very good defensively. That's part of the price that you pay. But if they need that offensive surge, if they realize that Jason Kipnis looks more like what he did last year as opposed to what he's done in the first couple weeks of spring training this year, I don't believe that Terry Francona would be hesitant to go ahead and make those moves to get that offense rolling and to get themselves back on the right track.
Appreciate you taking the time tonight, Jonathan. Great stuff. Tons of information on the Indians, and I'm sure as soon as something else breaks Cleveland sports-wise, Indians or not, we're going to have to do this again.
No question about it. Appreciate the time, as always, Nick. You've been doing fantastic work on the score. Hopefully you continue to get as many opportunities.
I'm humbled. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate that again. We have to pause for a timeout. That segment, that interview with Jonathan Peterlin at J. Peterlin, where you can follow him on Twitter, an old intern of mine. That was brought to you by U.S. Waterproofing. Cracks causing water in your basement. Visit uswaterproofing.com to schedule a free consultation. One more stop in the Centrals that we go through. We have to get to it next. Minnesota and the Twins. Can they compete in this thing? Can they compete? Steal an AL Central crown? We'll discuss that next at 670 The Score. Welcome back in 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. Nick Szepkowski with you as we continue to preview the NL and AL Centrals. We're creeping ever closer to opening day, 8 days away once we hit midnight here in just a little while. For the latest on the Minnesota Twins, their expectations for 2018, we go back out to the hotline. Cody Christie, you can follow him on Twitter. No Dak Twins fan is where you can follow him there. Dak, like Dakota in North Dakota, writes for Twins Daily. Appreciate you taking the time today, Cody. How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
No worries whatsoever. The Twins last year, the surprise and kind of the everyone's rooting interest, I guess, of the underdog-type role in the American League, is it fair to expect them to be right in contention again for a wild card here in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the additions they made this offseason, they bolstered the bullpen with guys like Fernando Rodney, Addison Reed, Zach Duke. Their rotation is stronger now. I mean, they made a pretty good trade for Jake Odorizzi, signing Lance Lynn for only $12 million on a one-year deal. Looks like a steal, especially with what Alex Cobb is rumored to be getting here this evening. So, they bolstered their pitching staff. They brought in Logan Morrison to add some pop to the left side. I think a lot of national writers are giving the Twins a lot of praise this offseason for what they were able to do without handing out a huge contract. So it's going to be fun to see if with all these new pieces, if they can kind of put it all together. And like you said, they should be right in that wild card race.
Was it as surprising up in Minneapolis and in the Twin Cities and in the Twins territory when Morrison was, I guess, one let go, two brought in, because it made no sense? What the heck are the Rays doing letting a talent like that get away with?
Yeah, the word up here was a little bit of surprise. I think from what they have said, the front office has said, is that, Morrison with the one season, is it a fluke, the 38 home runs that he hit last year? He's talked about, that phrase launch angle is something that he really focused on last year, trying to get more under the ball. And I think you saw the effects of that last year. He did some other tweaks with his swing. So the Twins are hoping that that the Morrison that we saw with Tampa Bay last season will translate to Target Field, which at times has been a little bit tough for home runs, but with a guy like him and a swing like his, I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue.
Yeah, you look at the lineup for the Twins, and I guess just because maybe it's the youth that you look at and it hasn't been as established in a lot of our heads. Sure, Joe Mauer, not the one of 8-9 years ago, but a lot of names that maybe down here we haven't become as used to as the Twins that used to kill the Sox here locally, whether it was the Morneaux, the Mauers, Jason Kubel he'd hit like 634 against the Sox all season long. But it's turned into a pretty formidable middle of the lineup right there. What is like a realistic expectation here? What kind of step is it being expected for either a Miguel Sano or some of the younger guys in this order, like a Byron Buxton, to take in 2018?
Yeah, I With Buxton, I think we saw some flashes of what he could be last season. He completely redid his swing last year. He had been using a pretty high leg kick throughout different parts of the minor leagues, and he completely tore it down and started over from scratch. And in the second half, just looked like the player that most people had thought he was going to be when he was the number two overall pick. Is he going to hit at that level for a full season? Probably not. There's probably going to be some ups and downs, and he's going to need to find that right balance. But what he brings on the defensive side of the ball, if you can get above average hitting and the defense he's bringing, it's going to be pretty special player. With Sano, there's still some question marks if the assault allegations, if Major League Baseball is going to suspend him at any point during the beginning of the season. He did have a titanium rod put in his leg in the off season. So if he's going to have to be on the DL for any time. So there are some questions with him, because of the surgery. He did show up to camp pretty big, but, I mean, he's a large man that can hit the ball a long way. So if he is a little overweight, so be it, maybe. I think the biggest hit we heard about this week is with Jorge Polanco getting suspended for 80 games for PEDs. He was the Twins' best hitter for July and August last season, and really looked like he could solidify the Twins for the shortstop position. So now it's kind of going to be a mix and match of Eduardo Escobar, maybe a little Eric Ibar in there. A-Ray Adrianza will get some time too. So they're going to have to piece together shortstop until they can get to that midway point of the season and Polanco can come back.
And speaking here, learning more about the Minnesota Twins as we look around the American League Central. We're not expecting the White Sox to be competing for a playoff spot, but at least curious to check the pulse of what's going on with some of the divisional rivals, off seasons, and catch up on all of that as we inch nearer and closer, ever so close, to opening day. Can finally just about get there. Lance Lynn, you mentioned the signing of him. He goes right towards the top, not at the top of that rotation necessarily. How is the feel? How is the belief in the rotation for the Twins entering opening day here in the coming days?
Yeah, I mean, it looks better on paper from what we saw last season. Irvin Santana will start the year on the disabled list. He had surgery on his middle finger. I know some of the media outlets were reporting that at this point he can't even make a fist with his pitching hand yet. The Twins front office has said that that's normal for where he should be. He was going to miss the first 4 to 6 weeks. But like you said, bringing in Lance Lynn, a guy most people felt like was, the second or third best free agent starter on the market. I mean, you had Darvish up there, you had Arrieta up there, guy like Lynn. To get him for the deal the Twins did, and nothing long term, he's going to be able to hit free agency again next season. He's had a full season since he's been back from Tommy John surgery. So that's usually where you can pitchers seem to find that groove again and get back to the pitcher that they were prior to that major elbow surgery. So Jose Berríos is definitely a guy that Twins fans are going to be expecting a lot out of. Earlier in camp, he's lined up to be that opening day starter for the Twins, and I think they're looking for him to take that next step. He dominated at multiple levels in the minor leagues. That hasn't always translated to the big leagues yet. He did make improvements last year with his walk rate, and his strikeout rate still stayed right around that 9 Ks per 9 innings. So pretty good. Can be better, and I think that's what the Twins are going to be looking for, is him to evolve more into that ace-type pitcher. Kyle Gibson's kind of a question mark. He had a terrible first half of the season, actually got demoted last year, and had to come back and prove that he could be part of the rotation again. Did some good things in the second half, will be part of the rotation to start the year. Most likely, they're probably going to start with a four-man rotation just because of how many off days there are to start the year. But there are, Phil Hughes is another guy that's coming back from injury that could be penciled into the rotation as well. And they have some other top prospects. Steven Gonsalves is close to being major league ready, so we could see him at some point this season. And then Fernando Romero is another guy that is actually probably projects higher as Gonsalves on a lot of prospect lists.
Speaking with Cody Christie at NoDak, Twins fan, like North Dakota Twins fan. Twins Daily is where you can find all of his work, twinsdaily.com as well. All right, so play a little game here of best case scenario, worst case scenario. I think most people look at the Twins and say, all right, maybe they can match what they did last year, be a little bit better. You mentioned suspensions and some injuries to possibly be worried about with this team. If all things break right, do they have enough, with all things considered, to hunt down the Cleveland Indians in the AL Central?
I definitely think it would be a possibility. Some things are going to have to go wrong in Cleveland, obviously. Cleveland has a lot of depth and a lot of good pitching and some strong hitters. And they've been there. They've done that for multiple years in a row here. Some things would have to fall apart in Cleveland. I think you can look at the Twins and project them to be, they were 85 win team last season. Could they get to 90 wins? Yes, but I still don't think that's going to be good enough to catch where the Indians might end up falling this year. My best case scenario is that I guess Cleveland could fall apart a little and Minnesota could sneak ahead. We've seen that back in the 2000s with the Twins. They were able to steal the division a couple of years with some teams falling apart late in the season. So baseball's a funny game and anything could happen, but I think that would be the best case scenario. They get right around that 90 win mark and Cleveland falls back to the pack.
And real fast before he lets you go, not necessarily best case or worst case, what do you think is going to happen with this Twins team?
I think they're going to be in the wild card hunt. There's a lot of good teams in the American League that will fall into that category. The Angels, the Mariners, the whoever loses between the Red Sox and Yankees in that division. So they're going to be in the wild card hunt. And I think it would be nice to host a wild card game at Target Field in October. That sounds good to me.
Thank you much to Cody Christie for that tonight. Jonathan, Peter Lynn as well, old intern of mine, stopped by, said hello from Cleveland, checked in on the Indians. James Figgin, as we know from The Athletic. Matt Pauly from Milwaukee. Chris Ronji, that old stranger, stopped by, said hello, checked in on the Cardinals. And Ryan Davis spoke Cubs with us earlier tonight. Tony Gill and Herb Lawrence, hell of a job tonight, boys. Thank you very much for listening. All the texts as well. I'm at Twitter at Shep670. Grauber's getting ready. He's warmed up in the bullpen. He's coming up next, 12 until 5 on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.